In South Africa, our constitution prescribes that Parliament has a constitutional mandate to involve the public in its work. The same constitutional prescript applies to provincial legislatures. So all the work of provincial legislatures needs to be open to the public.
Welcome to the Conversations with Democracy podcast, where we uncover the successes and challenges of initiatives underway to build democracies in Africa. My name is Liz Letebele, and this podcast is brought to you by Democracy Works Foundation. Join us to find out about our work with our partners to build inclusive, equitable, and sustainable consensus democracy. In other words, democracies that work. This podcast series spotlights the work of the Civil Society Participation in Provincial Legislatures project that seeks to build bridges between local civil society and provincial legislatures. Today, we speak to Martina Della Togna, who spent 5 years in Parliament as its first multimedia manager, leading to the overhaul of external communication strategy, including the establishment of broadcast and online platforms in support of public participation in legislation and oversight. She is pursuing a PhD at Rhodes University School of Journalism and Media Studies in Makanda and is part of a media and communications research project titled Licensed to Talk, funded by the National Research Fund. Martina was invited to run a series of workshops for the CSPPL project. In this episode, Martina Della Togna and Mira Dutschke, South Africa Program Manager, Democracy Works Foundation, unpack how Parliament and the provincial legislatures practically carry out their mandate to involve the public in their functions. They take us through how parliamentary communications work and how communicating effectively is crucial to ensuring that the people are put at the center of the people's parliament.
Martina, thank you so much for joining us today and for talking to us in our podcast series for Democracy Works Foundation. Tell me, in general, why do you think parliamentary communications are so important in a democracy?
In South Africa, our constitution prescribes that Parliament has a constitutional mandate to involve the public in its work. Now, how does one involve citizens of this country in the work of Parliament without communicating? The mandate or requirement for parliaments in South Africa to communicate to citizens comes from the Constitution. So the Constitution prescribes that Parliament has a mandate and an obligation to involve the public in its work. And the most effective means of involving the public in the work of Parliament is to ensure that Parliament's communications platforms are available and accessible at no cost to the public to follow the works of both the National Assembly, the National Council of Provinces, and the committees of Parliament. The same constitutional prescript applies to provincial legislatures. So all the work of provincial legislatures needs to be open to the public. And it's obviously not feasible for all citizens to be able to walk through the walls of their respective provincial legislature or their national parliament. So the best way to do it is to invest meaningfully and significantly in the communications platforms, tools, skills that are needed to ensure that committee sittings or house sittings are broadcast or live streamed and readily available both to the media, to academia, to civil society at large, and then also to ensure that the parliament and provincial legislatures' websites are up to date on a daily basis with schedules, committee programs, resolutions from committee meetings, and adoption of reports and legislation and budgets at the level of the House. Good. I wanted to mention the concept of the People's Parliament in South Africa, our national parliament, and similarly provincial parliaments were established at the dawn of our democracy under the concept of people's parliaments. They're supposed to be there to represent the people. And I think that has informed a lot of the communication work that's happened, especially in the first few parliaments.
Martina, so you spoke to the constitutional mandate of parliament to be open to the public. And your research also points to various levels of how provincial parliaments are actually adhering to that constitutional obligation. Who within parliament is actually in charge of ensuring and taking the lead on communication?
So parliament is managed at a political level by the speaker and the chairperson at the level of the National Assembly and the National Council of Provinces. And at the provincial legislature level, it's the speaker of the provincial legislature. That's the political head of the institution, of that arm of state. At the level of the administration of each parliament, it is the secretary to parliament who is the administrative head and therefore accountable for Parliament's budget, to operate its programs, its staff, its resources, and so forth, all in lieu of supporting members of Parliament and the presiding officers to conduct their business. It is therefore a joint responsibility by both the executive authority as well as the accounting officer of each institution to ensure that there's enough investment in communications at the front end as well as ICT in the back end to ensure that the external communications platforms of the legislature are equipped, up to date, current, and able to perform the task of informing the people of this country on a daily basis on the work that Parliament is doing, the meetings, the decisions, the resolutions, and so forth. In democracy, just like in justice, justice must be seen to be done. In the context of Parliament, oversight work and the important decisions that Parliament makes must be seen in order to be understood and believed and accepted by the public. And this is why the spirit of openness and transparency are important to democracy. And parliaments are the ultimate expression of that in any democratic state.
Like every other arm of state, Parliament and provincial legislatures had to operate under difficult circumstances during the hard lockdown, which was necessitated by the outbreak of the COVID-19 virus. With committees unable to meet in person and plenary sessions cancelled, there was a time where the work of the legislatures was hidden from public view. The country's legislatures had to adapt and put measures in place to resume their functions. Part of this involved being innovative in the ways in which they facilitated public involvement. Martina provides an overview of Parliament's and the provincial legislature's efforts to communicate effectively to the public, comparing how well they did this pre-COVID-19 and since the pandemic hit our country.
So my research, in my long-term observation of parliaments pre-COVID, it was only really the national parliament that was effectively live-streaming some of its houses, but not committees, and no committees were being live-streamed. So committee work of parliament and provincial legislatures was still very much a big challenge, with civil society organizations struggling to gain access to committees and only occasionally being able to watch committees live or recorded on the parliamentary TV channel, which at this point is still limited to MultiChoice, which is a pay subscription broadcast service and therefore not accessible to the vast majority of South African citizens. So there were limitations. With the advent of the coronavirus pandemic, what has transpired is that both at the national level and at a provincial level, there's been a huge shift in the way committees are meeting, the way the houses are sitting, and so forth. And our national parliament took its cue from the IPU, the International Parliamentary Union, of which it's a member, which shared best practice methods for kind of going virtual with parliaments nationally and with provincial legislatures. So the IPU and the Commonwealth Parliamentary Association, which South African Parliament and the provincial legislatures are also part of, you know, encouraged nation states, parliaments to adopt a virtual mode of working. And so for the first time in South Africa, you could be sitting anywhere in the country and follow a portfolio committee meeting of national importance.
While the COVID-19 pandemic has disrupted life as we knew it, it has been a boost for making the country's legislative platforms more accessible to the public. No longer limited to just the parliamentary channel on DSTV, virtual sittings and meetings broadcast over social media have broadened reach. The experiences across the country's provincial legislatures and at national parliament were, however, not identical. Martina shares her research findings on the adoption of virtual technologies and some of the obstacles and successes experienced along the way.
You know, although there were teething pains and lots of technical challenges with members not being up to speed with technology and members who now found themselves in their home bases or their constituency spaces, dealing with the kinds of challenges that citizens face on a daily basis around data and kind of signal reliability, I think all the more focus has now been put on the democratization of access to information by parliaments, provincial legislatures, government, for both enhancing democracy and oversight, but also in terms of making sure that all the people in this country have access to the information they need. So provincially, my research found that initially there were a couple of provinces who were more ready than others to come online and to start using social media and YouTube in particular to live stream sittings. Amongst these, the Eastern Cape, the Western Cape, the KZN kind of really were quite successful in the first few months. Provinces like the Northern Cape struggled a little bit more. And what causes that struggle is threefold. One, the Northern Cape is a huge, sparsely populated, but very huge in area context province. It's also therefore a province that because of the low density population across such a big geographical area, what you find is that cell phone companies haven't invested as much in infrastructure for carrying signals. So you have towns, villages, rural areas where there's no signal. And that causes a problem because obviously without a cell phone network nearby, you aren't able to access data-based web information. And that does impede public involvement, public following, and so forth. Okay, the second challenge is within the Northern Cape legislature itself, which hasn't invested as much as it should have in ICT and communications technology. What you typically find, and this is not unique to the Northern Cape, what you typically find is other provinces that also have huge rural populations haven't invested enough in the kind of front-end and back-end communications technology and skill set that is required to drive a digital communication and public participation strategy. And often that impacts on how quickly provincial legislatures can come online. I was very happy towards the end of last year to see that the Northern Cape was starting to test its live streaming capacity. And I know that there is now a commitment by the Speaker and by the Secretary to Parliament and the senior managers to go this route. It's just a matter of being able to find the requisite support capacity. But there's a bigger policy shift that needs to happen, you know, with the expense of data. Third thing that I want to mention is the general lack of media profile that provincial legislatures have. And this affects the Northern Cape and it affects all the provincial legislatures. It's almost a level of government that is not really recognized. And I think it's in the interest of both the legislatures and citizens to raise the profile of the work that's happening in provincial legislatures. A lot of kind of state challenges have occurred at provincial level. And begs the question, what role have provincial legislatures played in oversighting provincial governments effectively?
Apart from getting buy-in and the understanding that it's a shared responsibility between the political and the administrative appointments within Parliament. What are some of the other challenges that parliaments experience in facilitating public participation?
I mean, one of the biggest challenges, and I mentioned it previously, but I just want to go into it, and it affects both civil society organizations and MPs, is lack of skills, and also an anxiety, high levels of anxiety around putting themselves out there on social media. Countless times I've heard, gosh, I don't want to go into Twitter, you know, I can get into trouble, you know, or Facebook, people say rude things or whatever. And again, and often it's just literally they don't know, MPs and public representatives don't know how to use their tools. They don't know how to manage, set up their tools. Now, coupled with this is the fact that both at national level and at provincial level, legislatures don't have the capacity to provide support for each and every member of parliament to do their communications work. So at best, there can be support for the presiding officers, the speaker, or the chairperson, the chairpersons of committees. But often you have like tiny little teams of communications officials that are trying to do everything and are specialists in little, but are general communicators. That can support media releases, kind of updates to websites and so forth. And their partner in, units in the IT space also are dealing with very little few staff, not enough budget to kind of invest in the software and the hardware that's needed to provide kind of the support for social media and proper websites to be developed. And I think this is something that secretaries to parliament and the executive authorities of these institutions need to really look into. If you look at the cost savings from travel from this past year due to the coronavirus, and you start investing more heavily in communications and ICT technology and soft skills, the real, the human, you need to create posts for young people that actually are able to provide the support to the public representatives to communicate effectively.
Moving to digital platforms as the primary form of communication has also highlighted the necessity to address the attitude of MPs and MPLs. While having parliamentary and legislature committees and sittings available on social media platforms may be seen as a positive move to enhancing public participation and confidence, it is not all public representatives who view social media as a good in itself. Others have reservations regarding the consequences of using their social media accounts to communicate directly with their constituencies and being accessible to them.
Another interesting challenge that I found that often limits the use of social media in particular with members of parliament and in the provincial legislatures as well is this kind of anxiety around the dark side of social media. I think there's been a big reticence by political representatives, including at the level of speaker, to open their accounts, to be accessible in the digital space. There has been a disconnect between members of provincial legislatures in using social media as a tool to engage with their constituencies and then citizens at large. And I think a lot of the time that I do engage with public representatives through programs like Democracy Works and other initiatives, I find myself convincing members that they are public representatives. It's actually in the same way that the institution can't choose. It's a constitutional imperative for a legislature to communicate and involve the public. Same goes for public representatives who are elected officials. They have a mandate by communities and they have an obligation to communicate and report on their work. Ironically, this is also an important part of building their profile as politicians and as community workers and so forth. So it's a win-win situation from where I'm sitting. But so often I have to deal with the anxiety that comes with that. You know, are people going to be rude to me on Twitter and so forth? And I'm, you know, you have to understand that each platform comes with its own vitriol, but you know, you are at any given point in control of what you say, what you publish, the tone you use, and it can make a big difference. There's some great examples of public representatives being accessible and showing that the work that they're doing, rather than keeping it in the corridors that they frequent, out of sight of the public, out of sight of the media.
There is a need to shift more focus on the work of legislatures in general, but provincial legislatures in particular. To what extent is the work of these institutions being profiled in the media, and why does it matter in a constitutional democracy like South Africa?
My view is that the more one can pay attention to the work of provincial legislatures, the more the media will cover the work of the legislatures effectively, again, giving a boost both to the work of the legislature, but also giving a view to citizens on the work of the legislature. I mean, the role of the Fourth Estate, the role of the media is critical in democracy. It can't be the only source of independent information. Civil society organizations and organized civil society has an important role as an interlocutor between the ordinary citizen and the legislature as well. But really, I think provincial legislatures need to pay a lot more attention to their relationships with the media. Which brings me to another point, and that is kind of just general awareness around how parliaments work, how provincial legislatures work. And I have found, again, affirmed by my work with Democracy Works in the Northern Cape and with your civil society organizations, that there's still a lot of information lacking in terms of how parliaments are structured, what role they play, what rights do civil society organizations have to attend meetings and so forth. And there's a lack of understanding both within the legislature, within officials, but also civil society organizations. In an ideal world, civil society organizations should be able to advocate and lobby at the level of committees for interest groups and for areas, organizations and communities that are suffering or dealing with service delivery challenges.
Like the media, civil society holds great potential to make the work of public representatives in national and provincial parliaments accessible to people and communities. Civil society organization often represent marginalized and vulnerable members of our society and can act as interlocutors between them and parliaments.
But often civil society organizations are blocked because of a lack of comprehension of who's responsible, what their rights are, who to go and approach it within a legislature. And similarly, within the administration of different legislatures, officials who, on the most part, in my experience, are well-meaning and have a passionate commitment towards public participation, but don't know how to create those relationships with civil society organizations. For me, the best public participation requires, at the very first level, information, and that's where your communication platforms are important, because you can't involve someone without informing them first. The next level is to invite civil society to engage meaningfully on issues of national and provincial importance. The third step is really to partner with civil society organizations around oversight work. And any legislature that's well run and has the interests of the people at heart will see that civil society organizations in a developmental state like ours are important partners in oversight work. MPLs can't be everywhere. You know, so it's in the interests of members of parliament and provincial legislatures to develop relationships with community-based organizations and civil society to be partners in that oversight work and in that public engagement work. It can only end up in a win-win for citizens. You're going to have a significant change in citizens' view of the legislature. You know, you're going to take one step closer to the promise of the People's Parliament, which has been lost through the kind of challenges we've witnessed in parliaments in South Africa, you know, emerging from the years of state capture, which I'm going to have to mention because we can't pretend like it didn't happen and like provincial and national parliaments weren't involved in it one way or another through not conducting meaningful oversight. So the sixth administration and the sixth parliament and the sixth provincial legislature over the next 5 years need to really up their game in terms of investing in the proper technology, investing in the right human resource skills necessary to ensure that never again do we have a situation where parliaments, the work of parliament and the provincial legislature is kind of under the radar of the public.
During COVID-19, everyone obviously relied much more on digital platforms. And this has obviously affected how parliaments and legislatures in South Africa have functioned. You've already mentioned a load of these issues and a lot of the changes that have happened. Is there anything else you wanted to add?
So the pandemic in South Africa has accelerated the digital revolution in this country. And I think it has also showed up the undemocratic environment, digital environment in which we live. So I think going forward, the government and parliaments need to pay close attention to this. They need to make sure that the costs of data are less prohibitive. So areas of policy concentration need to be in terms of access to the digital space for all citizens of this country, for education, for health, and for all services. The fourth industrial revolution is no longer kind of a concept floating around in the air. We are living in it. And the success of South Africa's economy and South Africa's citizen development and growth is going to depend on how fast and how committed our government and the provincial legislatures and the national legislatures are towards ensuring that the right skills investments, the right digital technology investments are made to ensure that everybody has access to the internet as a human right. Let's call it a human right. I mean, anybody who doesn't have access to the internet at the moment is hugely disadvantaged. So during COVID, some progressive regulations were passed that forced the cell phone operators to provide education services and health-related services online to be zero-rated. By zero-rating, it means that you don't need data to access these websites and these essential services. My hope is that at a national level and provincial level, these kinds of groundbreaking policies can be sustained. Because in my view, data has become, and the access to the internet proper has become a public good, just like libraries are a public good. It's an essential part of a thriving democracy.
So, you know, I think it's really interesting of what you say, the challenges that a lot of provincial parliaments experience. And I'm also, you know, encouraged by the fact that through the program, we were actually able to make a few changes with regards to those challenges. In particular, after the engagements that you had with the parliamentary staff, very importantly, the launch of the communications campaign, Legis Friday campaign, where, you know, each Friday an MPL would share their passion, how they can be accessed, which committee they work in, which are small steps towards increasing bridges of communications between CSOs. At the same time, our CSO partners started, you know, broadening their network and started communicating via social media. And we were very encouraged to see that those two things were linking. They were sharing each other's posts. They were reading each other's posts. Of course, mindful of the digital divide that you have mentioned, you know, we're also trying to bring radio as a very powerful tool to link with social media to, as you had mentioned, this understanding that it's not about using a singular platform and hoping that the people will come to that platform, but rather to diversify your offering so that wherever people are, in whatever situation they may be, they will be able to access that information. So I think that's really interesting, and that has been also a huge learning for us on this project. I think we have pretty much touched on the question, how does social media in particular fit into the role of the public participation landscape, specifically in provincial parliaments?
The advent of social media has been recognized as a change maker for the world over, for the way governments and parliaments communicate with citizens. But really, it has its limitations too. So, you know, they are great means through which to inform the public about the programs of the legislature, share invites to public participation opportunities, solicit requests for submissions and petitions, and for general public education campaigns around, you know, what is parliament, what is the provincial legislature, and so forth. In particular, I like the kind of things that emerged from the Northern Cape, where MPs and the speaker started realizing it's important to also profile themselves as leaders and as public figures accountable to citizens, to share the day's work with citizens, to get a better sense of what does a speaker do? What is the role that the speaker plays? What is the role of a chairperson of a committee? Which committee is dealing with what, you know, how to access that committee? So I think it's a good start. And I mean, I think we can only grow from here. I mean, I think over the next 5 years, we're going to observe a legislative sector that's going to embrace digital communications a lot more effectively.
Both civil society organizations and provincial legislatures really should increase their uses of the available free social media platforms to increase dialogue and engagements with each other and with the public.
The public has a right to know. It's a constitutional imperative. At any given point, you know, provincial and national legislatures can be challenged at constitutional court level for not being accessible or transparent enough. My point is not to drive a campaign around that, but rather to show the win-win for the provincial legislatures in terms of investing in these resources. And they must also start organizations. They must also invest in their own skills. I have ironically encountered really serious and very committed community activists and community-based organizations who are then at the same time, they have no problem expressing their view in a public platform, but are worried about social media. And I mean, for me, that's quite ironic, because if you're going to be an advocate, your voice must be heard, and your voice must be heard on Facebook, on Twitter, for the same reasons that the public representatives have an obligation. If you're going to stand on a soapbox, you might as well use social media to amplify your message and collaborate meaningfully with other civil society organizations around shared messages and shared areas of interest.
The COVID-19 pandemic has provided a litmus test for South Africa's readiness to embrace the fourth industrial revolution. It has demonstrated the serious gaps and disparities between those who have access to digital technologies and those who do not. The pandemic has compelled the country to make policy shifts and spotlighted the urgency with which policymakers need to consider bridging the digital divide.
Anyone who doesn't have access to the internet at this point is going to struggle to participate in any kind of platform that is designed, you know, even as we had mentioned, radio, but that's a very one-way conversation. You can only listen to it. It's very difficult to actually speak and continue to speak other than maybe having a five-minute call in. Martina, you had mentioned earlier the important role of civil society organizations as kind of interlocutors between communities and parliaments. Like, just broadly speaking, from your experience, you know, what are some of the greatest successes that have benefits for communities or positive outcomes that have come out of this partnership or out of those partnerships?
In my observation of the last year that I've been observing and being a participant in the work of Democracy Works with the Northern Cape, what I've observed is that we've really tackled two issues. One is educating or leveling the playing field as far as awareness around how Parliament functions, what its role is, how it's structured. So that's been an important area of work with civil society organizations that are working in the legislature space, advocacy space. So it's kind of just sharing as much knowledge as possible around how public participation framework is meant to enable public participation, what the mechanisms for it are, and then specific to the Northern Cape, how that works. And then secondly, I think the work that Democracy Works has done, interestingly, to work with both officials and civil society organizations and strengthen each of those sectors or partners towards bringing them closer to each other has been very, very successful. And I think walking out of this project, I can see that you have left behind a group of organized civil society organizations that are much more confident in the social media space, are much more confident in their understanding of how parliament works and are much more confident to pick up the phone to the relevant officials, to try and get hold of committee chairpersons and so forth. And vice versa, I think within the legislature itself, I think what Democracy Works and its interventions have led to is a much higher level appreciation of the function of communications and ICT in the work of the legislature, to the point where you've been able to influence the speaker, the secretary, and senior managers who ultimately are responsible for making the financial and resource decisions that will enable a much more robust and meaningful presence for the legislature in the digital space. So in effect, I would call that, like, you know, the first level of intervention. I think going forward from here, I think there's a lot more skills transfer that needs to happen, and tangible social service delivery issues need to be monitored in terms of whether those are taken up or not, whether petitions are being taken up or not. So I think the circular thing of submitting a petition or making a submission and getting feedback on it and seeing the problem at the local level resolved is, I think, the loop that we still need to complete. So I think it requires another couple of years to monitor the success of it. You've planted the seeds, you've brought the partners together, you've brought people like myself on board to share our insight where it's applicable. Now it's really about deepening and practicalizing those intentions. So I'll be satisfied when I see the Northern Cape Provincial Legislature's committee streaming daily, when I see the House sitting daily, where I can follow the Speaker of the Northern Cape on Twitter and see what she's doing on a daily basis. That's when I will feel we have succeeded. And then for civil society organizations, when I see them engaging with their committees and feeling satisfied that their issues have been addressed and that communities are getting the schools that they need or getting access to the data that they need or whatever it is that the challenge is at the local level, that's when I can feel that this project has been a success.
Democracy Works, through its CSPPL project, has empowered local civil society organizations to access and work more closely with provincial legislatures in Limpopo, Northwest, and Northern Cape. As this project draws to a close, there is a need to reflect on the past as well as to strategize for the future.
But you have outlined what you would consider a success, but in terms of programming, building on this project, what kind of programming do you think a organization like Democracy Works Foundation should embark on in building on these first steps?
Democracy Works is in a unique opportunity, having both these relationships with provincial legislatures and civil society organizations, to really look at the digital economy or the digital social justice economy and democracy economy at a provincial level. And because you've chosen to prioritize provinces that are so deeply rurally based, so geographically disparate and so forth, I think the next step would be to support civil society organizations to make their digital advocacy more sophisticated and use specific campaigns in relation to the provincial legislature and the provincial government to reach a culmination. So have pilot campaigns that are based on legitimate, real community concerns that civil society organizations are part of and track those issues. There's also a challenge around service providers that are up to scale and able to provide this kind of technology support to provincial legislatures. And I think that there's an opportunity for, you know, some level of service provision to be made that is rooted in the provinces. I think that there are other divisions and other units within the legislature that also need interventions, that also need support. The committee support unit, for example, is crucial to a successful public participation and information process. And I think maybe that's an area that you guys can look at going forward, is working with committee secretaries, working with research units, who all have a stake in the communications and all who share the goal of enabling public participation. And then the other area is to look at how much Democracy Works can look at the Fourth Estate in the context of the Northern Cape and the other provinces you're working in, have a look at the journalists that are working in those spaces, the kind of coverage that those provincial legislatures are getting, and civil society, and see whether an intervention can be made at the level of the media in terms of their understanding of the such important role of legislatures in oversighting the work of provincial government. I mean, we know all about the sins of the provincial governments, but what we don't know, it is what the provincial legislatures have done to hold those provincial governments accountable. And I think those are stories that need to start being told.
Thank you, Martina, for your insights. Thank you so much for taking the time to speak to us today. It's very much appreciated. But most of all, I just want to express my gratitude to all of the professional support and guidance you have given the project during this time. And we, you know, are really grateful for having had the opportunity to work with you. And we look forward to working together in the future.
The Civil Society Participation in Provincial Legislature project was made possible with a co-funding and technical assistance from the European Union and the Westminster Foundation for Democracy. Please follow our channel for more conversations with democracy. This is Liz Letabele signing out.